welcome to episode 164 of the Daniel Yoris podcast with today's guest, Alex McBrary. Let's go. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Joined here by my man, Alex. Alex, thanks for being here, man. I appreciate your time. I appreciate you, you know, taking the time, scheduling, traveling, getting sick, and still making the time to be here. It means a lot, man.
Listen, I'm honored to be here, Daniel. It's a pleasure.
It's almost like an analogy, not to jump into it so quickly, but like with your fitness, like you got to get things done. You know, it's not always the right time. It's not always, you don't always feel like it. You don't always, it's not always perfect, but you still got to get things done. And I think that this is a good little, you know, this podcast coming together is a little good microcosm of that.
You're absolutely right. It's sometimes you just got to check the box and get it done. Obviously, we had a little bit of flexibility and I'm appreciative of that because I would have powered through physically last week, but I knew I was mentally cloudy and it wouldn't be the best ever. So I think there's definitely that balance, right, of checking the box and getting it done and knowing when to be smart about it and pull back a little bit. So
yeah, there's so much messaging, and I'm sure that you see this too, about like making sure that you take your rest days and that, you know, listen to your body and stuff like that. But sometimes, like, if you're not really in tune enough with your body, if you listen to what your body's telling you, it's going to tell you to sit on the couch and eat cookies. Like that feels great every single time you do that, right? It doesn't maybe still feel so great afterwards and in the long run, but you've really got to get in tune with your body to know, okay, can I push through this? Should I push through this? Or is this like actually, you know, red light, stop sign, like, hey, you gotta chill here for a second. But it's tough to really learn that.
It's funny you mention that because I have an Apple Watch and I'll track my workouts on that, but I have an app on there that will track my recovery score from 0.0 all the way to 10.0. And I can, obviously when it's like five or below, it says rest, like take it easy, don't go intense, whatever. I almost seldom never listen to it, right? Like I'm always just doing whatever. And it's funny because I've actually had some really great workouts. And when this thing says I'm at 0.0, like way below the line of recognition, it's like, dude, you need to chill. And I'm like, but it feels good. So we're gonna rock it out.
Yeah. I think that's one of the problems with some of the tracking devices, the fitness device. Like I wear an Oura Ring, same thing. Some days it'll be like a pretty low score and I'm like, that doesn't, like, I feel phenomenal. I've been eating good. I went to bed at a normal time. Like my training's been like, everything's fine. But then there's a difference between sometimes it is very low and some of the metrics are like, are quite low. Mostly for me, it's been like body temperature and if my heart rate is way higher during the night. Mm-hmm. If I see those, then I know like, that's when I know that I'm about to get sick. And that's just been historically accurate for me. And that's when I'm like, okay, I can take, you know, I should rest here. But to your point, yes, sometimes it does show a low score and it's like, yeah, but I got squats today. Like this is not the right day for this. Like I just gotta do this. And maybe, you know, it might not end up being the best workout. And sometimes it is. So like I think these devices are useful, but you can't put too much stock in them, like the calorie tracking on them. You didn't burn 875 calories in your 30-minute Zumba class. Like, it's just, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's funny. I just recorded a video about this the other day about activity trackers and calories. And for me, it's really, I encourage people to just look at the trend of the total over time, right? Same way with measurements and body weight and everything else, is the specific numbers don't matter that much to me. But what I like to see is, are they generally higher overall? Are you being more active? Are you putting more effort in? Are you in better shape? All of that. More than, like you said, I burned 875 calories in a 30-minute Zumba class. Now I can go eat 1,200 for reward afterwards.
Yeah. 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 It is a difficult concept, I think, for some people to get around because you're used to only weighing yourself once a week or every couple months. Like the scale is the most obvious, I think, example of this, right? Where we do only care about the trend. We don't care about daily things. And one of the main things that people notice is that, hey, the scale does move up and down based on totally normal life things and sometimes totally random things you don't know. But as long as it's heading in the right direction, we can't get too caught up on like day-to-day fluctuations, but very, very difficult to overcome. On that, do you have most of your clients track their weight daily or how do you go about it?
I typically do once a week. I like once a week because I feel like it's enough frequency that we can keep an eye on the trend and see, all right, are we generally moving in the right direction given that they're, you know, whatever their goal is. Are we headed in the direction that we anticipate and that we want, or are we remaining stagnant? Are we going the opposite direction? Do we need to make a shift in how we're approaching this? But it's infrequent enough that I've seen with people that I work with that the daily fluctuations don't mentally wreck them. Process. And I've heard the case for doing it daily because it allows you to kind of normalize or neutralize the emotions around the fluctuation so you can see them frequently enough. It's almost like exposure therapy. Like you see it enough that you can kind of write that off. And I think there is some value to that given some individual preferences where I know some people that that would completely wreck them mentally. And in fact, I have some people who never weigh themselves because any sight of the number would just ruin them. But for most Gen Pop people, I find once a week is more than enough.
Interesting. Because I'm definitely on the side of weighing daily or not at all kind of thing, right? And this is a good conversation to have because I don't think, like, neither of us disagree with each other on this.
Right.
We do things differently, and this is what personal training is about. We give different things to different people, individual approach to everything, right? There are some clients who never weigh and some clients who always weigh and some clients who weigh less frequently, use photos, measurements, this, that, the other thing. Like there's a lot of tools in the toolbox, right? We just got to know how to apply them. And I think, you know, this is one of the biggest values of having a coach is you might read a post that says, hey, only weigh yourself once a week or weigh yourself every single day. And for whatever reason, for you as an individual listening to this, you're like, oh, that destroys me. Like, I can't do that. I can't figure it out. And it's like that. It's not because the approach is wrong. It's just the wrong thing for you at that time.
Right.
And that's a really difficult thing to navigate for a lot of people is trying to figure out what's the right thing for me right now, given the context of my life.
Yeah. And it's finding that delicate balance, as you said, of there's no argument that daily is the best data gathering measure, right? Because you get the most amount of data, you get the best insight into what's actually happening. That's fantastic. But then you got to balance it with the emotional toll that that may take on a person. Somebody who is able to separate the emotion from that, daily, hands down, best way to go about it. And if someone can train themselves, as we said earlier, train themselves to eliminate the emotion from that, the more the better. But for someone, in my opinion, who is still struggling with the emotional impact of that, that's where the balance comes in. That's where, as you said, we got to find that individual method that's going to work for them to create that balance.
What are some other metrics then they use? Because I think this is going to frame a lot of the rest of this conversation. It's just this whole concept of how does our psychology dictate our actions and the outcomes of our actions? Because all of the approaches work, just not all of them work. And therefore, like, they don't work because of these intangible reasons. Again, going to the same example, daily weighing doesn't not work. It just might not work because of your past experience, because of any number of reasons why it makes you feel bad. We just use that as like a catch-all kind of statement, but it's not a bad thing. So are there other, what other measurements do you use then to track progress outside of, I feel better?
Yeah. So there's really four main that we do. One is the body weight, of course. Then for objective measurements, we use also tape measurements, which admittedly end up morphing into just how are your clothes fitting? Do they feel mm-hmm. Right. Again, we seldom really look at the specific numbers. We look at the trends over time. But as people actually start to have those physical changes, it just morphs into clothes. Right. Because that's what people ultimately care about. We also track, everyone in our program tracks their stats for their workouts, of course. So we can see, OK, are you moving more weight? Are you doing things faster, better? Are you stronger? Are you resting less? All of these kind of objective physical measurements of performance we like to track. Because we also, it's important to us that many of our clients that come to us want body composition changes of some kind. And it's great to measure that. It's great to for them to see their progress in that endeavor. But we also want to prepare people for what comes after they've met that goal, which is often performance-related things. Like, what comes next? What can I put my effort into? What can I focus on that's not just continuing to lose weight, even though I have no more weight to lose, which is something we often see, right? Or helping them make that transition from the start instead of having to cross that bridge when they're in that kind of no man's land of switching to maintenance from a weight loss and, you know, all the mental aspects that place. And then, as you kind of alluded to, we do take some subjective measurements of, do you feel happier? Do you feel more confident? Do you feel better about yourself? Do you generally feel happier? Which I do think are important measurements. Of course, the obvious ones, because that's ultimately what everyone wants. And our program, my background's in psychology. So we take a heavy psychology mindset approach to how we help people make these changes and how we help people discover the goals that they want and kind of lead into those. So these sort of psychological subjective measurements are very important to us because we want people to leave feeling a little more optimistic, feeling a little more positive about themselves, about their life, about their relationships, about everything. So it's kind of, that's a complex interplay of, because obviously those subjective measures change on a daily basis sometimes, depending on how we're feeling other things. So trying to, again, gauge the trend of those subjective measures is a big thing for us. But I would say those four, body weight, tape measures, performance measures via workouts, and then those subjective health well-being measures are kind of the crux of what we take.
It's almost like the subjective measurements are almost more important, but less, I want to say the word less valid. I'm not sure that valid is the correct word to use there, but it's less like repeatable as a measurement, because it's like, well, how do you feel? Are you happier? Do you feel like you have more energy? And like you said, this can change, you know, hour to hour, throughout the day, week to week. It's not a catch-all thing. I think an underrated benefit of keeping track of this, or at least asking the questions, is also getting people to think about it themselves. How often do people stop and think about, oh, am I happier? Do I feel a little bit more energy? Like, do I feel like I got a little more pep in my step today? Like, you know, and spending the time to think about it, sometimes you can realize that, placebo or not, because you can convince yourself that you are happier. And like, if that leads to real happiness, then like, you know, so be it, we'll take it, because you can also do the opposite and make yourself feel worse, both physically and emotionally. So I think that drawing this awareness, and this is something that I always come back to, is like, we got to find ways to draw awareness to good changes that are happening for people, because it's really hard to see for themselves sometimes.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you mentioned that kind of placebo, and people can convince themselves that they're happier, because it reminded me of a research study that they did where they had people make certain facial expressions, certain emotions on their face, and then they measured how strongly they felt certain emotions afterwards. And what they found is that even if it was a fake smile, people who smiled more felt happier, regardless of what was going on.
Interesting.
So there definitely is something to be said. And this is, you know, I'm kind of that perpetually optimistic, happy person, positive person. And our members in our program come to know that very quickly, that that's who I am. And so there's inside jokes about that and whatnot. But it really is not just kind of who I am and how I want to approach my life, but it also is very intentionally that way when I'm interacting with the members in our program, because there's also something to be said about being in an environment of that expression of emotion, so that if I'm smiling at someone, they feel compelled to smile back. And even if they're having a crappy day, that smile is going to make them feel happier. And then they're going to walk away feeling better. And that's going to lead them to having more motivation or more drive to carry out the other health behaviors they want to do.
Yeah, this is absolutely true. One of the, you know, rules I think that a lot of people learn as a young coach is, you know, you're supposed to be the best hour of that client's day when you're coaching someone in person, right? You can't come in, I don't care if you've had, you know, 9 sessions in a row, the last client was yelling at you, like, you can't just come in with a bad attitude and like a mopey mood. Like, you gotta like make it up, fake it, do whatever you gotta do, but get yourself up to get your energy up to give that client the best hour of their day, because they don't care that you've had a shit day, but they're only coming in for 1 hour, and you gotta make that person feel good in that hour. And if they feel good, then they're gonna perform better and everything else gets better. So it's like, you gotta find ways to make this. Now, there's a deeper conversation to be had here of like, if you are actually upset and sad and, you know, depressed in your life, like, you got to go and deal with that stuff. You can't just fake your way, through all of it, but like, you can muster it up a little bit just to get through some things and make some things a little bit better.
Yeah.
In that research study that you were referencing, if you recall at all, what mechanism did they suggest or propose was the reason as to why like a fake smile would actually make you feel better? Did they guesstimate at anything as to why that might be the case?
That is a fantastic question. I wish I could remember the very specific details about that mechanism that they proposed. Now, if I'm going to speculate just purely from memory, because it was a long time ago, I want to say it had something to do with the muscles that were activated in the face.
Interesting.
To create certain expressions, then sent signals to the brain that led to the emotional experience.
Yeah.
But I'm not entirely sure on that. So
yeah, no, fair. I didn't expect that you would, you know, be able to quote the study, but it's similar to, and I would have kind of probably guessed at something like that as well. It sounds very similar to like the, is it the Pavlov dog? Like, you hear the whistle and you know, you start slobbering for food. It's like, well, you smile, so that must mean you're happy. It's not like too dissimilar of an idea. So it seems logical that that would be the case. Then brings us back to this whole, like, how much movement actually does impact our mood and our happiness and our well-being. As simple as a smile can genuinely make you feel happier. What can, you know, going for a walk, going for a run, getting a hard workout in, like, how much can that impact, because it's such a greater stimulus? And so I mean, we're obviously, you know, we've been beating this drum for forever, and we're, you know, sound like a broken record sometimes, but like, you gotta just move, and it's gonna make you feel that better in every single way possible.
Absolutely. And it's incredible to me on that point of just the interplay of so many variables that can lead to feeling better, right? Not only the endorphin rush from the movement itself, right? But also the feelings of confidence and competency you get when you're able to move your body and when you're able to master certain tasks or perform well at a given physical achievement or whatever the case is, that then lead to, again, even more feelings of endorphins, even more ability to smile and express a positive emotion, which then leads to even greater sense of well-being and happiness. So it's just, there's such a, and I think you're right, and we could beat the drum on this forever, but the moving your body daily in a way that feels good, and if it's fun, the more the better, has such a profound effect on how good you feel every day. That is lost when people are sedentary for so long, because then that the loss of that becomes normal and they kind of don't understand what they're missing.
Yeah, it becomes their new normal, and you realize that when you feel bad. Here's an example that I'm thinking of here as I'm stumbling upon my own words. When someone kind of embarks on a fitness journey, they start changing their nutrition and whatever, they start to feel good and they do feel better, but they almost then start to forget how bad they felt before. And then what will inevitably happen at some point is, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks down the road, whatever, there's a birthday, there's a cheat day, heavy air quotes for lack of a better term here. There's something that happens that like they go back to like their normal kind of poor eating habits and all that stuff. And then, you know, they report in the next day, like, damn, I feel like I got hit by a truck. Like, what happened to me? All I had was pizza, a couple beers. Like, what's going on? I'm like, that's how you used to feel all the time. You just didn't realize it. But you need that, you know, the dichotomy, the darkness and the light, the good and the bad. Like, you need to kind of know that. And sometimes that's even like a good coaching strategy, is like to kind of lead them in that direction, to just remember like, hey, you've been doing great, but you got to keep doing this stuff to keep up this good feeling, right?
Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned too, kind of as a coaching strategy, sometimes letting people see what their old life was like or skip back over the line and just experience essentially how shitty it felt, so that it increases their own internal motivation and their own intrinsic motivation. Like, I actually don't want that anymore. Like, it's no longer that I feel like I can't. Like, I genuinely don't want to feel that way anymore.
Yeah, exactly. What are some strategies that you use to manufacture good feelings? You're having not that great a day, but you know, you've got a call coming up, you've got something coming up, and you're like, hey, I gotta get up for this. How do you actually go about doing that for yourself outside of put it on a smile? Yeah, for yourself.
Like me personally. That is a fantastic question. You know, it's interesting because I think what we were talking about earlier about, you know, new coaches need to kind of create that best hour for their client as possible. And it's funny because in the beginning, when I was discovering this for myself, it was almost, for me, I conceptualized it as creating a persona or a character that I would step into during my sessions, during my classes, whatever. And then for me, it didn't matter how crappy my day was. When I stepped into that persona, I was this positive, upbeat, happy person. But the thing that I noticed is over time of doing this hours a day, every single day, I genuinely became a happier person. And so in light of that, I think generally what allows me to step into a more positive, optimistic frame of mind before I get on a call, whatever, generally be happier, is the ability to really put things into perspective. And I think this stems from experiences in the past that were really tough to deal with and really, for lack of a better term, were kind of my personal rock bottom moments. But then it gives you a new metric with which to gauge everything else against. Like, okay, I'm having a crappy day, but it's not as bad as that.
Right.
So I think the ability to put things in perspective, does this thing that I'm concerned about or that's making my day less good, is it actually that bad? And will it actually last that long, or is it going to go away? And for me, just in general, the ability to keep those things in mind generally keeps me pretty even keel most of the time.
Yeah. I like that line of thought a lot. It seems very stoic in nature to just kind of logically assess the situation. Like, all right, this is not my best day ever, but it's far from my worst day ever. And it will end. Like, there's kind of one, you know, there's there can almost be two options. Like either this is going to kill me or everything is going to be okay. And like most of the time, everything's going to be okay. Right. So you can kind of phrase that. And obviously like, you know, there are bad things that happen and, you know, whatever, but you will get through it. I think this is also important to even discuss in terms of people's fitness and starting to identify or see yourself as someone who is fit. I feel like a lot of people struggle with this. Like, hey, I'm not a gym person. I'm not the order a salad at a restaurant person. I'm not the whatever person, but I want that end goal of having that fit body, having that energy, feeling good. And so how do I close that gap? And so that's a really difficult identity shift that is important for people to kind of go through as well. Absolutely. Have you seen that a lot? I'm sure.
It, you know, it reminds me of one of the tools that we use that we stole from cognitive behavioral therapy is something called Socratic questions. Mm-hmm. And so what that is essentially is a series of five questions that allow us to evaluate the story that we're writing about a situation. And that's ultimately when we're having a bad day, when we're having a negative experience, it's ultimately not the stimulus itself that's causing us to feel negatively about it. It's the narrative we write in our head about what's happening that leads to the negative emotions. And I can, the best example I can give of this is if you think of like a boss you've had in the past who might have given you a critical piece of feedback. If it's a boss that you hate, your reaction and the story that you write about that and how you feel about that is very different than a boss you admire. Right?
For sure.
The exact same situation can be interpreted two very different ways based on the story that you're writing about the situation. And so Socratic questions is essentially these five questions. What's happening right now, which forces us to actually define the problem that we're having instead of just being lost in this emotional loop. So what's happening right now? If I'm wrong about the situation, what's a different way of looking at this? If I'm right about the situation, what can I do about it? Right? So we're looking for alternative stories we could write with the second and with the third. Now we're shifting our brain to solution focused. What can we actually do to resolve the issues in front of us? If we had a friend in the same situation, what advice would we give them? Hmm. Which creates that emotional distance. We give great advice to other people, but it's harder for us to take it ourselves. And then lastly, what should we do now? Which then shifts us into this action oriented. Let's actually take some control back and let's do something about this. And what I find, I personally do this when I'm having bad days. We teach many of our clients this strategy as well. And it allows people to really, as you mentioned, evaluate what's going on in their life on their bad day, whatever's holding them back, but then actually put them into better control of what to do about it. So they're not being driven by those negative emotions and those negative experiences. And they're actually able to overcome them.
That's a phenomenal strategy. Right, shifting into action instead of just wallowing in whatever's going on, because you can continue to do that and you'll feel bad and whatever, but you'll never get out of it that way. And it's just you'll continue to just downward spiral. It's the opposite of like fake a good day. You're nociboing yourself into making the entire situation worse, which is a really easy trap to fall in. Like to be totally fair, it's very easy to get in that trap. And we all get into it, you know, every now and then things happen. But having some actionable strategies to like, hey, well, what can I actually do to make this better or improve my situation? Like, hey, and all these things, they sound really simple. I mean, someone listens is like, oh yeah, fucking great. Easy for you to say, but you know, you gotta actually put it into action and it will work for these people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it, over time, as people continue to practice this strategy and get or feel more in control of the stories that they're writing, to your earlier point, it gives them a better sense of how to create that new identity for themselves. Because now they can learn to write their own stories instead of them being written by circumstance, by habit, by whatever the case is, which is powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I find that we often play... Why do you think that a lot of these tricks or these strategies, they seem to be so obvious in the negative direction? We convince ourselves that when we're not good enough, we don't like the way we look, we're not enough, we're not strong enough, we don't have enough willpower, I'm not a morning person, I'm not good at remembering people's names. Like we hear a lot of these, I'm not good at or I'm not enough of blank. Well, very often do you hear people talk about themselves like that in a positive light? And if you convince yourself that you're not, then you won't be. If you convince yourself that you will, you have a way bigger chance of becoming that thing. In your estimation, like, why do you think that is? I know this is a huge question. So why do you think that is?
I mean, there's definitely, there could be so many different arguments made for so many different reasons for this. I will say, I think one that's been sitting on my mind more lately that I've been pondering a little bit more about for my own personal life too, is I would wager that the negative frame of reference is the easier path. Because if we can, by being negative, we're essentially reducing the expectations that we place on ourselves and thus other people are placing on us, which is less work. There's less responsibility to perform. There's less involvement. Like, people are not expecting much from us because we're not expecting much from ourselves. And so there's less risk of failure. Having those same mentalities in the positive direction, being very confident in our abilities, being willing to praise the things that we've done, creates a higher expectation on ourselves to perform to a certain level. And with that comes inherent risk of potential failure. And I think, A, we have to live up to those expectations, which is more work, but then we also have to risk that failure, which could be a hit to our ego. And so my inclination, or what I would speculate in this moment, is there's some degree to which it's just easier for us to take ourselves out of the game.
Yeah. I mean, that seems perfectly logical and reasonable to me. You can't fail if you just set yourself up to not do anything, right? Right. If you say, oh, I'm not good at that, then yeah, it's really easy to be not good at something. Like, all you have to do is nothing, right? It's really difficult to be good at something or to improve yourself, and change is difficult. We know that change of any kind is difficult, even if it's positive. If you were moving, if someone won, like, you know, the lottery today, and all of a sudden you have, you know, $100 million and you get to buy a, you know, fancy car and a fancy house and do all this stuff, like, there would still be a level of stress that comes with that.
Right.
It's still change. You're still moving into a new neighborhood. You're still got to figure out how this new house works. You don't know how to, you know, work this fancy car. Like, there's still stress that comes with change in anything. And that would be less because you don't have to work for anything. But if you had to work to create that change, there's, I think, that element of the chance of failure is very strong, and especially in more ego-driven people. Like I would say that I'm like that myself. I feel like, oh, I want to do all these things. I want to get all this stuff, and I want to, you know, reach these goals and all that stuff. And so you set the bar, like, quite high, and like, oh, but if I fail, like, that hurts. It hurts me more to fail. And I don't want to set these little tiny goals. I'm like, ah, anyone could do that. Like,
yeah.
And well, who cares about that? Like, oh, you know, you did this little thing. You made, you know, whatever, $5,000 extra or something, you know, like, ah, who cares? Like, you want to make $500,000 extra. Like, you want to set the bar high. And there's definitely pros and cons to, like, a proper goal setting and how you can set goals. Hey, I want to lose 30 pounds in a month. Like, probably not. You're probably setting yourself up for failure, because it's just not, forget the reality of whether that's good physiologically or not. But like, hey, if you don't reach that goal, you're going to set yourself up for not having a good time. So we've got to set expectations accordingly. And that's probably, I'd imagine that goes hand in hand with this. It's just setting expectations accordingly. High enough that it challenges you, but not high enough that you are making it a high chance of failure.
Absolutely. And it reminds me of another study which is something called the Pygmalion effect. I don't know if we've heard of that before.
It sounds vaguely familiar, but
so the Pygmalion effect is essentially this idea that we tend to rise to the expectations placed on us, and similarly, we will fall to the expectations placed on us. So if there are low expectations set for us in terms of our abilities, our achievements, whatever, then we will tend to only reach those, or we'll reduce our abilities to meet that. Conversely, if they're appropriately set high, not exorbitantly high that are impossible, but as you mentioned, just far enough out of reach, a stretch goal, if you will, we tend to put more effort in, we try harder, we have a greater belief in ourselves because other people are expecting us, one could say that about ourselves as well, our own personal expectation, that we will be more likely to reach those stretch goals because of that higher expectation.
Yeah.
So there is definitely some importance with setting those proper stretch goals so that there is that expectation. And this is one thing why working with a good coach is so important too, because they can set those high expectations on you that you might not have for yourself because you're so used to reducing yourself or limiting yourself into this tight bubble of just your comfort zone. But having somebody who is a positive experience, who believes in you, and who can set something just outside of what's comfortable for you and actually make you believe that you can do it can make all the difference in you getting there.
For sure. It's half the battle is knowing about what's possible and what's realistic. Like, I'm sure you've had this as well, but over the years I've had clients come to me and they'll talk about some goal that they have. And I'm like, yeah, we can do that like next week. Like that's great. It's a good starting point, but like, you know, we're going to work together for, you know, 6 months. Like we can finish that next week. Like what we got to go a little bit bigger than that. On the other side, you'll have clients who like, hey, I want to like, you know, get in, you know, movie star shape. I'm like, okay, well, we've got a lot of, you know, in 3 months, like, okay, well, we've got that's just not possible. And it's not that they're being overly ambitious or, you know, they're not being crazy about asking for that. They just genuinely don't know. They're like, oh, well, I saw on, you know, Men's Health magazine, such and such, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal got shredded for Roadhouse in 7 weeks. So I thought I could too. And I'm like, okay, but that's not, you know, it's marketing, it's fluff. There's a lot of other things that go into that. Like you can't just go from, you know, normal off the couch, 40 pounds of body fat to lose to like movie star shredded. Like we've got to set those expectations accordingly. So again, it's not anyone's fault. It's just like, hey, we got to tone this down a little bit. This is what we can actually do in that time frame. You can get there. Just this is what it's going to take to get the thing that you want.
Absolutely. And the setting that expectation is so important. And I think this is also where a lot of new coaches falter a little bit, is because that setting the appropriate expectations can make all the difference in someone's motivation level. Because if someone's expecting to get the Jake Gyllenhaal body in 6 weeks, and that's so far out because they have 50 pounds to lose or this, that, or the other, and they fail to meet that, even though they had the expectation of it, that is going to shrink their confidence in themselves so greatly,
yeah,
that they will seldom believe anything they're after. And so it's even setting the expectation, even if it's something that somebody may not want to hear, will be the best thing for them in the long run.
Where do you fall then on the scale of letting people do things that are maybe a little bit more extreme, as a word, such as someone comes in and says, hey, like I really want to lose weight quickly. Like, you know, I've heard that, you know, cutting out all carbs is good. And I really believe that based on XYZ. Letting them kind of do that or something like that for a little bit, because you know that it will get them faster results in the short term. And again, heavy air quotes on results if you're not watching on video, right? You know, you'll have little, you know, a bigger scale weight drop and, you know, all these things. But it's just to create buy-in. How do you feel about that? Because again, this is very loaded and there's a lot of like nuance here, but how do you approach that kind of situation?
This reminds me of, I listened to a talk that Mark Fisher gave many, many years ago. This was back in 2017. And he was talking about self-determination theory and this idea of autonomy, the importance of people to feel autonomy in their program and feel in control of the changes they're making to their lifestyle so that they are actually more driven to do it instead of being told what to do. And so the way that this plays out to your question is, if somebody suggests that they want to try something, a diet they saw online, a training program that a movie star did to get ready for a role or whatever the case is, and they're adamant about trying it, as a coach, all that I can do is explain my position on it. I can say, this is why I think that's not a great idea. Here's what's likely to happen. So my recommendation is continue what we're doing and not press for this. But if someone is super, even given that, if they're adamant about it, I will never just directly tell someone no. I'll be like, listen, this is what I think, but if you really want to try it, let's try it. And then I will do my best as their coach to implement it in a reasonably sustainable way, or, you know, just a reasonable way in general, right? So they're not just fully going off the deep end. And then ultimately, what happens is a few weeks in, they feel miserable. They're not having a good time. And then this has even happened in the past where people will try new diets or whatever. And then they'll come back and they'll be like, Alex, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
And then that's not a I told you so moment or anything that, but it's just like, well, I'm sorry to hear that. Here's why you might be feeling that way. Why don't we make these changes instead? And then because they had the control the whole time, now they get to make up for themselves, their own mind, whether they want to take the miserable path or they want to do something that still gets them results, albeit more reasonably, but just doesn't leave them feeling like trash all the time. And then they're more accepting of that and more likely to rock with it.
Yeah, totally agreed on that. One quick interjection. Lost you on the video there. There we go. Good. Just didn't want to interrupt. No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
Well, I think what might be, I think my phone might die here shortly.
Okay. Then we're going to try and wrap this up. We're going to try and wrap this up quickly. Although it is short, but it's okay. On that note, I agree with you. Sometimes it goes back to what you were saying earlier about letting people make their own mistakes and kind of learn from it. Because like we said at the beginning as well, like you and I have no secret knowledge. We've been saying all the same things as all the other good trainers, all of our friends and colleagues. Like we're all saying the same stuff. But sometimes people have to come to these conclusions on their own. So you want to try the no carb, the no food, the no meat, the no whatever, the intermittent fasting, fancy movie star. Like by all means, like here are the facts of that approach. Here's what you should expect. Here's maybe how I'd change it for you as an individual. Here's why I would or wouldn't do it. If you want to do it, then by all means, I'm going to keep you safe while you're doing it. Like I'm not going to let you do something that's going to hurt you or cause harm, of course. But outside of that, like if you want to do that, then fine. And if you come to that realization 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks later, like, hey, that was pretty dumb. Like, yeah, it was. But that's okay. You tried it. Now you know it. And now you know it for yourself rather than just knowing it because some guy on a podcast said it. Like that's not, and sometimes that works and sometimes it's not. I got a client yesterday, finish the story quickly. A client yesterday said, I listened to this podcast. Who was it? Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person. And she goes, I was listening to all these things she was saying and I was like loving it. Like, yeah, like, you know, this is great. Like, this is awesome. I'm going to start doing these things. And then I, you know, thought about it after. And she's like, this is all of the things that you've been telling me for like a year and a half. I'm like, what an idiot I am. That's what she said. Like, what an idiot I am. Why didn't I just listen to you? And I'm like, oh, like, you know, we laughed about it and whatever. And we have a good relationship that way. But it's like, it's interesting that like, hey, the way that I said it in that context and whatever, maybe just didn't hit for her. But the way it was said in that podcast in that way, and by that voice, by that story really hit. And it's all the same messaging, but people have to come to these conclusions on their own somehow.
Absolutely. And that's how I see our role as a coach is just to guide them to their own conclusions, not necessarily to give them their conclusions.
Yeah, that's for sure one of the most powerful ways, right? We can only guide. Clients will say, you know, thanks for helping me so much. And my, you know, snarky, smart-ass response is like, I just talk. Like, I didn't really do anything. I just talk. And they're like, no, but you helped me. Like, okay. Yeah. But like, you know, you have to do the work. Like, you have to do the things. We can only guide. We can only guide. Definitely. How much time do you think you have left? Probably not much.
Ooh, not much. It's going quick now. We're on 6.
Okay. Okay. Let's cut this off so we don't lose the whole thing. Okay. And maybe we'll pick this up and do another one another time.
I'm having my shit together next time.
No, it's all good. It's all good. We got it out short and sweet and hits hard. Where can people find you and get in contact with you? All that stuff. I'll throw it in all the show notes.
Absolutely. You can check me out online at 18fit.com. Or you can find me on Instagram at _18fit_. Post a lot of stuff about fitness psychology, mindset related stuff, all the psychology that goes into the behavior change, which I think is missing in a lot of people who just try to jump right to the programming and don't think about the internal workings of things. So I definitely recommend following along for all that extra insight.
Beautiful. 18fit.com. Alex McBurdy. Alex, thanks so much for being here. I will put everything in the show notes. Is there any last note that you want to give to the people quickly before we shut this down?
Oh man, on the spot. I would say just keep going. Don't give up. You know?
One love day. It.
That's the saying I have with my clients. One day at a time.
One day at a time. I love it. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate everyone for listening. Definitely check out Alex and everything that he's got going on. Follow along, stay updated, like, share, subscribe to the podcast channels, all that stuff. We appreciate you. Go outside, be a good person. See you next time.